You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at LockedOnBulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShibles, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Text and voicemail line 331-979-1369. We're doing mailbag today. We have a handful of voicemails to get to and a bunch of text messages as well. So we're excited for today's episode. Hit us up though, 331-979-1369 if you want to be a part of the conversation. Whenever you're listening to the show, wherever you're listening to the show. So with that, welcome back, Matt. Real quick, good to have you back. Bobby Portis's interview. Hopefully everybody out there enjoyed that. It was, thanks for bearing with us too with the audio. At times, especially at about the first minute, 90 seconds or so, it's a little bit loud, but it seemed to carry over pretty decent. So hopefully everybody really enjoyed that interview. I think listening back to it now two or three times, Bobby sounded like he had a great time at the event. And he also predicted that this Bulls team was going to win, at least make the playoffs. No win total, but at least make the playoffs. Well, first, what's going on, Matt? How are you doing?
Doing good, Jordan. What's up, Bulls Nation? Yeah, that was probably the biggest takeaway from Bobby's interview, right? Is that he's very confident about his upcoming season, his role on the team, and the fact that these young Bulls are going to take a big step in the second year of the rebuild. He was talking playoffs. I think there's certainly at least a substantial portion of the fan base who's happy to hear something like that and agrees with him and thinks that this team, especially in a relatively weak Eastern Conference, is good enough to make the playoffs. I still don't think I'm there yet, but it is nice to see the player have that kind of confidence because, you know, it doesn't matter. It's not really like surprising to hear that. Even last season when everybody knew that the Bulls were tanking, the players still go out and play. The players still go out there and try to win games every night. I think the Bulls are going to be better than they were last season. I don't think that's a very hard test. I'm really looking forward to seeing what Bobby can do this season. And there are a lot of questions on this team, and there are a lot of questions about each individual player's own personal agenda. And we've talked a little bit about that in the offseason. And Bobby's no exception to that. This is a team that has a lot of pieces in that crowded front court. Bobby's not probably going to be a starter unless anybody gets you know, suffers a significant injury at some point this season, and he's going out there and he's going to try and prove himself to be a guy worthy of another contract, whether that's with the Bulls or somewhere else.
Yeah, early indications say that Bobby is looking between $15 and $16 million per year.
I love Bobby, but I don't think he's worth that, and I don't think the Bulls are going to want to give him that much money.
It's going to be difficult to make that decision if you're hanging around $15, $16 million per season for a guy that may not even start. Same thing. Love Bobby's game, and I hope they can work something out that's advantageous for both sides, but I think it's going to come down to his production this season. And if he hits the free agent market next season and he goes somewhere else, there's going to be a handful of teams that will be interested in signing him, especially because of his age. And if he dominates again like he did last year, he may get 15, may get $13 to $15 million next season. But I think it's all going to depend on building upon what he did last year. So, yeah, I don't know. It'll be a tough decision for the Bulls to have to make once again next season. And not only him, but decisions on Jabari Parker, decisions on Cameron Payne, and a few other guys. And also, too, can't forget about Chris Dunn. Chris Dunn's going to be looking for an early extension as well. So, interesting, though. Bobby was a great guy. Great interview, too. Had some laughs along the way. So, if you didn't listen to that, if you didn't get caught up yet, go back and listen to our episode from Tuesday. That was with Bobby Portis. So, that was a great time. But today's episode, want to get into some of your questions. So, you can hit us up. 331-979-1369 is our text and voicemail line. We've got a backload of a bunch of voicemails and text messages that we didn't get to in last week's episodes. So we want to get to those this week. Like I said, you can hit us up on our text and voicemail line and we will try and get to any of those voicemails or text messages that you guys drop us. Before we get to the first voicemail though, Matt, I want to make this announcement because I continue to forget to do it on every episode and I don't want to hang our listeners out there to dry or think that they don't know what's going on, but I mentioned a fantasy basketball league that we may or may not do here on Locked On Bulls, and it's gotten way more attention than I thought we were going to get initially from it. So,
yeah, we got a lot of textures saying I would be so down if you guys did a Locked On Bulls fantasy league. Maybe we gotta. I've been so focused on fantasy football getting started that I haven't even had 2 seconds to think about fantasy basketball. But maybe, I mean, based on the interest we've gotten, maybe it's something that we should seriously consider doing.
I think we're going to have to. So anybody that's already texted us or dropped us a voicemail real quick saying, hey, definitely want to be a part of your Locked On Bulls fantasy basketball league, we'll get in contact with you. We're thinking maybe, I don't know, depending on how many people we get, potentially an 8, 10, 12 team league. And a little bit of a buy-in, too. So if you're willing to put up a little bit of money, I think that would make the league even more fun. So we'll have more information for everybody there in the coming week or two. Try to set something up because it seems like a lot of our listeners want to be a part of something like that. So I think that would be a lot of fun. We didn't get a chance to do it last year, and I think this is a perfect opportunity to start something.
I'm down.
I'm down, too. And look, like you said, I think I'm focused on fantasy football for the first few weeks here. But after my week one, 0-3 in all three leagues, we could be ending that attention span pretty quickly in the first 4 or 5 weeks. But we'll
all right, well then I'll let you handle that. Our team for the first month or so of the NBA season, because I plan on winning my fantasy football league.
Yeah, I had some injuries go down this weekend and some players not play up to the expectation that I had for them, but what's new? But with that, let's jump into our first voicemail. Let's get to our first voicemail. 331-979-1369 is where you can hit us up. Text messages and voicemails there. So our first voicemail comes from one of our listeners in Philadelphia.
Hey, guys. This is Casey from Philadelphia, a long-time listener, first-time caller. Got to say I love your show and love listening to it while I'm at the gym out here in Philadelphia. I want to get your opinion about ideal player comps. I feel like too many player comps for young players when they come into the league are lazy. They're based on a player's appearance or maybe a one-dimensional aspect of their game. And in particular, I wanted to talk about Lauri Markkanen and his ideal player comp. And again, we're talking ideal, not, you know, where he is right now. I think too many people try to compare him with Dirk Nowitzki because he's tall and he's white and he's foreign and he can shoot. But I think that actually his ideal player comp in terms of what he might grow into is Rasheed Wallace. I think that people forget what a beast Rasheed Wallace was back in the day, before the antics on the court and the suspensions and the fouls. He could bang guys down low. League, a lot of people were saying, you know, he was up there with Tim Duncan. Who's going to have the better career, you know? And even when he was older in his career, when he turned it on in some of those playoff games, he just absolutely bodied people. So I think the way that Lowry's developed his body, he's got a mean streak, which I don't think enough people talk about. I'd like to see him develop into a high-motor Rasheed Wallace, somebody who could go down, get rebounds, isn't afraid to throw an elbow or a shoulder into some people, but then when he wants to, take him out to the three-point line and drop the three. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. And sorry, I'm not in Chicago to be able to make it to the bowling event, but I'm sure you guys had a great time.
All right, Casey, thanks for the call. Matt, I'm going to let you touch on this one first because this is the first time I've heard really Rasheed Wallace and Lowry Marketing being comped. What are your first thoughts after going and kind of comparing both Rasheed Wallace's stats and Lowry Markkanen's, and also kind of the career trajectory that would put Markkanen on?
Yeah, thanks for the call, Casey. My first thought was, holy crap, I want to go back to some of Sheed's playoff games from the aught 2000s and just watch that guy play basketball. There was never a dull moment when Rasheed Wallace was on a basketball court. I mean, I loved that guy. Kind of like the next generation's Dennis Rodman. Great defensive player, little bit of a head case, but you did not want to cross that guy. Of course, most widely known for his role on that championship Pistons team in 04 after getting traded. Spent the bulk of the first half of his season with Portland. And he was on some good Portland teams, and he was on some solid Pistons teams, including the title-winning team in 04. I agree with Casey that the Markkanen-Dirk comparison is kind of lazy just because, they're both Euro players and they're both seven-footers. Like, I agree with that. And I feel like there are a lot of lazy player comps getting tossed around these days. One that you and I have laughed at on this show was, I think, Sheed's former teammate in Detroit, Chauncey Billups, making a Wendell Carter Jr. Carlos Boozer comparison. And we were all like, dude, no, what? Just because they're both front court guys that went to Duke? Like, what are you drawing on? What are you drawing from there? As far as the Markkanen to Sheed player comp, I mean, I see some similarities that Casey's talking about, and with Markkanen bulking up his frame and maybe developing more of a post-up offensive game in his sophomore season, and, you know, the mean streak thing that you're talking about. We saw glimpses of that from Lowry. There's no way he has the same mean streak as Rasheed Wallace. Very few people in the NBA over the last 40 years have had the same mean streak as Sheed. But I get the maybe if Markkanen develops a post-up game, and then also as a front court guy who can step out and shoot the three. Couple of things. Right now, Markkanen is not the defensive player that Rasheed Wallace was, and also Sheed was known for hitting clutch threes in big moments of big games. A lot of them come to mind, but he wasn't actually a great three-point shooter over the course of his career. He was a 33.6% career three-point shooter. Barely shot any threes in the first four or five seasons of his career. The only time he had a season where he hit over 40% from behind the arc was in 98-99 with Portland, when he shot only 0.6 threes per game, and he hit him at 41.9%. But other than that, I mean, you're in the low 30s. He had a couple of seasons with Detroit where he was hovering around 35 or 36, and that's not bad. That's respectable as far as three-point shooting goes, especially from a big. But I think we all expect Markkanen's career three-point numbers to be a little bit better than that.
Rasheed Wallace's first four seasons in the league, he didn't even play in full seasons. I'm looking at 98-99. He only played in 49 games there. 96 and 97, hung around 60 games or so. I'm hoping that, looking at these stats, I'm hoping Lowry Markkanen's a better player than Rasheed Wallace is. Like, looking at his stats in his first four or five seasons, and then obviously his time in Detroit was big, and then following that, his one season in Boston. But still, I think if Rasheed Wallace is the Lowry Markkanen comp here, offensively, I would be a little bit disappointed.
I mean, Sheed never averaged 20 points in a season.
And that would be a huge
disappointment. Had a couple in the 19s at the back end of his Portland time, but Yeah, if Markkanen is never a 20 points per game scorer, I think we'd all agree that that would be a disappointment, right?
Yeah, that would be a huge disappointment for me. And you brought up the three-point shooting, too. He's a career 33.6% three-point shooter. And like you said, I think people think Rasheed Wallace was a better three-point shooter than he actually was. You had mentioned the clutch shots that he makes there. So I would hope, for the sake of Bulls fans and for the sake of us calling Lauri Markkanen one of the most pure shooters we've seen, that his three-point percentage would be way better, and his attempts, too, at the three would be way higher. And they also were, like, Rasheed Wallace, he was averaging, like, 0.7 three-point attempts per season in his first, like, 6 years in the league. So, obviously, that's already completely different. The other sticking point, too, where I'm kind of, I appreciate the comp, but I'm not really seeing it, is the defensive side of the ball. You know, you look at Rasheed Wallace's defensive box plus minus, and you also look at his defensive rating. First four seasons, 108, 103, 103, 97, 99, 100. So all of those defensive ratings, and none of those really spiked in not even in his back end of his career, the last three or four seasons that he played. He was always a really good defender, no matter how old he was. And I don't know how closely Lauri Markkanen can get to that level. Obviously, that's going to be one of the biggest improvements for Lauri Markkanen's game this year, and that's what I'm going to be focused on, is how he plays defensively, what the body structure of his workouts this summer translate to on the court, and if he's going to be banging bodies harder than he did last season. And I think that's one of the goals for him this year, on top of, you know, like you had said, body banging bodies on the offensive side, developing a little bit of a post game. And if Lauri Markkanen can do that, I could see flashes of Rasheed Wallace. But I think for right now, Rasheed Wallace was a way better defender than Markkanen is, and probably a way better defender than Markkanen will be in the next few years. I would be very surprised if he got to the level that Rasheed Wallace was at. So I can see it a little bit, but I think Markkanen, if Markkanen is Rasheed Wallace, I would be very disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would too. And I think it's just because Markkanen is still a very young player with only one season under his belt, and we have talked at length about the ceiling he can reach. And I think his ceiling is higher than in his prime Rasheed Wallace. You mentioned the defensive ratings. Sheed's career defensive rating was a 101. So even as he aged, he was still putting up solid defensive numbers. Part of that is that as he aged, he was playing on very good defensive teams, the Pistons, and then that season with Boston in 2009-2010, another solid defensive team. But like, as you know, his last four seasons, defensive ratings 98, 103, 100, 99. And then if you flip that, Markkanen's offensive rating in his rookie season was 107. Rasheed's offensive rating over his entire career, also 107. So I think you hope that Markkanen's offensive efficiency can be higher than Rasheed Wallace's in his prime. He had a couple of years where he was around like 111, 110 with his offensive rating in the latter Portland years. And you hope that Markkanen has some years offensively that eclipse that. But I don't know if Markkanen's ever going to be the defensive player that Rasheed was.
Yeah, and looking at a couple seasons too, Rasheed Wallace was a pretty decent shot blocker, you know. I'm looking at the middle of his career where he was averaging nearly two blocks a game. So that's something else to keep an eye on, and that's something that I would like Lauri Markkanen to be better at, is a guy that's going to hang around the paint and be able to block shots at a higher clip than he did last season. And that's where I think I got stuck when we were talking about Kristaps Porzingis and Lauri Markkanen, is the fact that, yeah, Markkanen could be on the same path as far as offensive game goes, but will he be able to be the shot blocker that Kristaps was last year? And will he be able to be the rebounder that Kristaps was in his first couple of seasons? So that's something else that I'd like to see an improvement from Lauri Markkanen, and that would only make him a better player. But interesting comp for Rasheed Wallace, but I don't think I'm there with the evidence that both Matt and I gave you. So I understand it. Like Rasheed Wallace was a very, very good player, but outside of that, I still got all-star expectations, multi-time all-star, potentially all-NBA expectations for Lauri Markkanen. And anything short of that in the first three or four seasons, I think, is a disadvantage to Lauri Markkanen.
Yeah, I'm with you there. All right, thanks for the call, Casey. Let's move on to our next one. This one comes to us from one of our regulars. It's Mike in D.C. With some more questions for Jordan about Bulls coach Fred Hoiberg.
Hey, what's going on, guys? It's Mike from D.C. I want to answer Jordan's Fred Hoiberg question. You asked if there was a way for Fred Hoiberg to kind of gain some faith back in, I guess, the Bulls Nation or whatever. The answer is no. C-Red Fred was absolutely right when you guys had him on the show. We don't like Fred Hoiberg for two reasons and two reasons alone. The firing of Coach Tom Thibodeau was definitely screwed up. And two, the Jimmy Butler trade was definitely screwed up. Whether you believe that the trade should have happened or not, we got absolutely fleeced. We keep hearing terms like development and things like that. Fred Hoiberg has proven that he cannot coach anyone with an ego or any superstar type player. He has shown that. He has shown he can't get the troops together in the locker room. So no, there's no way that Fred Hoiberg can come back from the doubt that most of Bulls Nation has. So I just wanted to answer your question. All right, talk to you guys soon.
Thanks for checking in again, Mike. All right, Jordan, he was aiming this one at you. You've been the Fred defender on our show for the last while. What are your thoughts on his take on why a large portion of Bulls Nation doesn't believe in Fred?
See, I look at the two reasons he gave, and both of those reasons could be argued that those aren't Fred Hoiberg's fault. Like, those could be directed at the front office. So the first one is the firing of Tom Thibodeau. Like, that's not really Fred Hoiberg's fault, is it? Like, would you blame Fred Hoiberg for Tom Thibodeau getting pushed out of town? That wasn't his decision. Like, if the front office came to him 2 years in the making, a year and a half in the making, and said, hey, we're going to potentially have an opening in the NBA, and we want you to come be our head coach, you think he's going to pass it up and say, oh, well, I don't want to step on the toes of your coach already? Like, no, like, of course he's going to come in for an interview. Of course he's going to want that part of the job.
But to those fans who didn't like the Tibbs firing, it makes sense. That's what Mike's saying. Look, it's not about whether or not it's Fred's fault. It's why does the fan base not like Fred? And those members of the fan base who thought that Tibbs was fired in a way that was disrespectful, in a way that was wrong, it doesn't matter that it's not Fred's fault that he happened to be the new guy. If you get dumped and then you see your ex dating somebody new, you're probably just going to immediately not like that new person they're dating just because that's the new person that they're dating. It's the same logic.
That's fair. That's a good comparison. I could see that. But still, but what I'm going back to is it's not fair to hate Fred Hoiberg for that or to put that on him because that wasn't his decision. The whole Tom Thibodeau thing wasn't his decision. The one that I more closely align with is him talking about trading Jimmy Butler. I can agree with that partially. The partial agreement here is that him and Jimmy Butler did not get along, that they didn't see eye to eye. Jimmy wanted this to be his team, wanted Fred to focus the team around him, and him and Fred Hoiberg butted heads. But look, it could go back to the front office again, too. Like, the front office, do you really think that the front office was going to pay Jimmy Butler even if him and Fred had a decent relationship? Like, after everything that happened in 2016-2017 season, even if it didn't go down where Fred and Jimmy Butler were butting heads, I don't even think that was, like, the main cause of Jimmy Butler leaving. It was the fact that Jimmy wanted a supermax extension and the Bulls didn't see him as the number one option to build a team around. Like, that's plain and simple. So, yes, the Fred Hoiberg and him butting and Jimmy Butler butting heads did have part of a reason why Jimmy Butler left, but it wasn't one of the main reasons, I don't think at all. I think it was all about money and what you could do with Jimmy Butler as far as win or lose. And where the Bulls front office sat, I don't think that they thought that Jimmy Butler was a guy that you could place on a team and have and build around with the number one seed, hoping that you could end up being between 1 and 3 in the East. I don't think the Bulls front office, regardless of what his relationship was with Fred Hoiberg, thought that Jimmy Butler was a part of the future. So that, to me, is also something that I don't think you should be able to blame Fred Hoiberg for completely, because I think the Bulls front office had their minds made up either way. Like, did you really want a, what, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32-year-old Jimmy Butler making upwards of $40 million per season. Did you really think that was going to win you anything in the Eastern Conference? Now, in hindsight, LeBron has left and the East has kind of opened up. I get that. But I don't even know if that gets you even close to an Eastern Conference Finals appearance with just Jimmy Butler. And then you're keeping Nico Mirotic and a few other of these guys that they moved on from. That's just where I sit. I just don't think it's fair to criticize Fred Hoiberg for those two incidences, and I will give you a little bit of credit with the Jimmy Butler thing because that is partially his fault. But in the same sense that players can grow, so can coaches. Like, the idea that Fred Hoiberg can't grow from having to work with a guy that has a big ego, that's a superstar in this league, I think Fred Hoiberg can learn from those experiences that he had in the first couple of seasons with Jimmy Butler and trying to figure out how to be a head coach here. He can learn from the mistakes that he made with that and build off of it. It's the same way we talk about with young players and, you know, the mistakes that they make and what they can build off to not have those mistakes happen again. So, yeah, I'd like to hear what your response is, Matt, to that, not only to the two reasons that were given by our caller and by See Red Fred, but also what Fred Hoiberg can do to save face, I guess, with Bulls fans. Well,
if there's anything Mike said that I agree with, it's that Fred has shown in his Bulls tenure through the first two seasons he was here that he's not great at handling veteran players with big egos. That is accurate. To your point, I don't think that that's necessarily something that will remain a constant and a unchangeable factor of who Fred Hoiberg is as a coach if he continues to coach at the NBA level. I don't have a whole lot of confidence right now in his ability to be a guy who can wrangle those big egos. And if all these individual agendas that we're talking about with this young Bulls team becomes a problem at some point with how many shots is this guy getting a night, how many shots is this guy getting a night, who's taking the last shot, and that's another conversation we'll get to later. We'll get to see again how Fred handles that. But I think that that is the one thing that Mike is not wrong about. As for the Jimmy Butler trade and the relationship with like how Fred fits into that, and that being another reason the Bulls fan base doesn't like Fred, or at least a portion, there's probably some crossover between the Bulls fans who thought that Tibbs shouldn't have been fired and those who thought Jimmy shouldn't have been traded. And I'd be curious to see what that portion of Bulls fans thinks about what's happening in Minnesota right now. But, Mike, you're wrong. The Bulls did not get fleeced in that Jimmy trade. They did not. I mean, nobody ever gets equal value for a superstar caliber player like Jimmy across the league. So you have to factor that in when you talk about did a team win a trade or lose a trade or come out fairly even. I think in the Bulls' case with the T-Wolves, based on where Minnesota is now and the decision they're facing with Jimmy now, you have to say that the Bulls at the very least came out even in that trade. We're not sure what the ceiling is for Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine. We feel pretty good about the ceiling of Lauri Markkanen, but you cannot say that the Bulls got fleeced in that trade. That's just flat out wrong. And a lot of it has to do with the decision. And again, going back to how does Fred fit into all of this? I think, and a lot of this has to do with the fact that Jimmy, after getting traded, came out and said on multiple times in multiple interviews, hey, the Bulls had a choice to make. They chose Fred Hoiberg over me, right? I didn't want to play Fred's style of basketball, and they wanted to give Fred an opportunity to coach some young guys in his system. It was Fred or it was me. They chose Fred. And because we heard that soundbite from the horse's mouth and Jimmy Butler, everybody just assumes that that's how that went down. But it's not like the Bulls chose Jimmy or chose to trade Jimmy and chose Fred over Jimmy. Like, they chose to not have to deal with Jimmy wanting a super max deal in another year down the line. Yes, they wanted to keep Fred and see if he could coach a young core in his system and finally give him some of the right pieces. That is not mutually connected to the fact that they didn't believe in Jimmy being a guy who could be the number one on a championship contending team, or a guy who was in his late 20s and then into his 30s with a lot of miles on his legs, a guy worthy of that supermax DPE deal. And that has nothing to do with Fred Hoiberg, and I don't think the Bulls front office was wrong about that.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And like you were saying, you don't get even value for superstars when you make that trade. Like, I think the only exception you can look at is Indiana getting Victor Oladipo and Domantas Sabonis. But even then, like, Victor Oladipo's got to prove that he can be the guy that he was last year. And, you know, not it's not just a flash in the pan type of season for Victor Oladipo. But I think so, too. Like, the one thing that I will touch on real quick, and we can wrap this conversation up, is the fact that Fred Hoiberg's going to have a handful of guys in the locker room this year that he's going to have to manage. You know, Jabari Parker doesn't have the ego that Jimmy Butler does. But at the same time, he's going to have to keep Jabari Parker happy. He's going to have to keep Zach LaVine happy. You're going to have to keep Lauri Markkanen happy. Like, these guys all want something out of this. And it's not to the magnitude that the superstar ego that people surround Jimmy Butler with at that point. But I think Fred Hoiberg has learned from the first 3 years that he's been here and could take some of the things that, maybe had went wrong with Jimmy Butler and apply those to some of the young guys that he's got on his team right now. And maybe things do change. But I think it all goes back to the same conversation is, I think the most pressure this season out of anybody on this in this Bulls staff is Fred Hoiberg. Even outside of the players too, I think the pressure is all on him to make this all work. And we'll find out if it does or not. But I think the Butler trade, blaming him for that, Fred Hoiberg for that, and then maybe you hate or dislike Fred Hoiberg with association to Tom Thibodeau, and that's your choice if you want to make that association, but I just don't see it. I don't think you can hold it against Fred for anything that happened with Tom Thibodeau. It's just kind of the after effects. Before we get to a couple more voicemails, got to remind you, Dean's Dugout, 2035 South Washington Street in Naperville, Illinois. They're having Daniel Palka from the Chicago White Sox in on Monday, October 1st, 6:30 to 8 p.m. $25 tickets. That includes a picture and an autograph. That's 2035 South Washington Street, Naperville, Illinois. Dean's Dugout, deansdugout.com. You can call or order for tickets online, 630-527-8888. So once again, if you want to meet White Sox outfielder Daniel Palka for a signing Monday, October 1st, hit up Dean's Dugout. They were great to us for our Bowling with Bobby Portis event, and they'll be great to you guys too.
We were talking about fantasy football earlier and the fact that the NFL season's in full swing. College football also in full swing. Just a quick promo for our Locked On Podcast Network, which is expanding with college shows. Coming this week, we've got Locked On Wolverines, Locked On Buckeyes. So we're getting into Big Ten stuff here. Locked On Seminoles. Plus, we're already locked on to the Ducks, the Nittany Lions, the Bears, the Crimson Tide, the Wildcats, the Razorbacks, Volunteers, and Cougars. Find your favorite college football team and their show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. With that, here we go. Next voicemail comes to us from Luke.
Hey, guys. This is Luke. Called a couple weeks ago about the Zach LaVine contract. But I wanted to talk about something else. I wanted to know, like, why there's this huge amount of pressure on the front office to get a top-tier free agent next summer. You know, why can't we go the route of the Celtics where we draft well, get good role players, develop them through good coaching and you know, practicing and just general development, and then when the time is right, go after maybe a couple second-tier free agents, you know, and there's plenty out there, but I don't think we need, like, Stephen Curry or LeBron James to win a championship. Granted, that would increase our chances so much, but it's really hard to get, you know, one of the best guys out there. So, you know, like the Celtics, they got Gordon Hayward, not necessarily a top tier free agent. I'd put him in like a tier two category. And when they got him and Kyrie, all of a sudden they're a contender because they got good backup with all the role players. And, you know, I just wanted to see your thoughts on this and if you think the Bulls could go this route in developing their team. Thanks, guys.
All right, Jordan, you want to touch on this one first? Finding free agents versus finding and developing talent.
Look, it would be nice to have a Steph Curry, a LeBron James join the Bulls. That's just not realistic expectations. I think what the main conversation is the Bulls have to go this route of developing young guys because they don't have relationships with free agents. They may have the money, but they've swung and missed. And that's been historically over the last 10, 15 years. The Bulls just can't drive in top-tier free agents to come here. But at the same time, what he's talking about as far as developing your young players, I think the Bulls are on a path of doing that. They're already there. Like, you've got five guys, potentially seven guys, if you want to include Portis and Valentine in this conversation too. You got seven guys that you could develop the way that you're talking about, the way that the Celtics were able to develop some of their guys. I'm thinking like Terry Rozier and Marcus Smart, and just getting the most production you can out of everybody on your team. And the Celtics have been really good at doing that. But I, like I've said to you, Matt, too, and I kind of agree with the Bulls' philosophy, too, and they've dropped hints there as well that they want to go the route that the Rockets went. Is the Rockets built up guys that they felt they were comfortable with, and they didn't necessarily develop young players, but they were in the route where they obtained as many assets as they could, and they could be in a spot where they had financially the money to bring in a superstar or two superstars. And then, of course, they had Clint Capella play at a high level. They had Eric Gordon play at a high level too, and that helped. So I understand the philosophy behind it, but the Bulls don't have nearly the firepower that the Celtics had. Like, remember, they traded Isaiah Thomas for Kyrie Irving, and they had draft picks to be able to do that. The Bulls don't have that spot. Gordon Hayward, too, man, I would be argued to say that he could flirt with, you know, high second-tier free agent, borderline first-tier free agents.
Yeah.
So, yeah. To me, I think it's a little bit different when we're talking about the Bulls and the Celtics.
Yeah, Luke, I think what you're missing here, and you kind of, like, refuted your own point, is that the Celtics did both. They developed some young talent, and obviously everybody's really excited about guys like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and, you know, credit the Celtics front office and Danny Ainge for fleecing the Brooklyn Nets a few years back, and that's why they have all this young talent. But they also went out and signed Gordon Hayward and traded for Kyrie Irving. You're talking about getting star name free agents or star name players in trades. Gordon Hayward was coming off an all-star season when he signed with the Celtics in free agency. I get that he's not like top 10 player in the league, top tier, if that's how you kind of break that down, but the dude's an all-star. I would call that a top tier free agent signing. Kyrie Irving, top 15 player in the league when he's healthy. Yeah, that's a top 10, top, you know, that's a top tier acquisition as well. Trade versus free agency, but whatever. That's, you're kind of talking about drafting and developing talent versus acquiring talent in trades and free agency. And your point of, like, you don't think the Bulls need Steph Curry or LeBron James to win a championship? You said that exact phrase. Guess what? The teams that have won the last, let's see, 15, 16, 17, 18, for the last four NBA championships have had either Steph Curry or LeBron James. Before that, in 2014, it was a team that had Kawhi Leonard and still aging, but still pretty darn good, Tim Duncan. Oh, and Tony Parker. Oh, and Manu Ginobili. And then before that, oh, those two teams had LeBron James. And then the 3 years before that, the Heat choked against a team that had a still very good Dirk Nowitzki. And the 2 years before that, oh, right, Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant, and he's still in his prime, Pau Gasol. So I'm sorry, this idea that you don't need an elite superstar player to win championships in this league is just flat out wrong, man. It doesn't exist. You need a top-tier superstar talent, if not two, to win championships in the NBA these days. So we're trying to have optimism on this show about the young core that the Bulls have and developing the talent that they've drafted. And primarily, that is relating to, right now, Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. And we're trying to be optimistic about the ceilings of those players. But I think we're also realistic in the fact that if the Bulls right now don't add, whether in trades or free agency, a player whose current talent level and even ceiling, because maybe they're still just now getting into their prime, is not above that of Markkanen or Wendell Carter, I'm sorry, that team is not winning a championship. It's just not happening.
Basically, what I'm getting from that is you either have to have a top-tier player in this league, a superstar in this league, or you have to set yourself up to be able to acquire a top-tier free agent in this league. So those two options, I think the Bulls are in a spot where if they develop the guys that they have already, like, it's not set in stone that they stay with this team. Like, you can build those guys' value up and then end up finding a way to package that for a deal for a superstar. That's why I'm saying, like, the caller's right. You don't necessarily have to go after the top-tier free agents this summer coming up, because realistically, I don't think any of them are coming here. Like, Kevin Durant, I don't think is coming here. Kawhi Leonard is probably going to LA. Kyrie Irving is a big question mark, whether he goes back to Boston or if he decides to pair up with Butler and go somewhere else. So I don't think he's coming to Chicago. Jimmy Butler's for sure not coming back here. Klay Thompson is going to stay out on the West Coast. Those are your top five guys that are part of free agency next season. And then you've got Kristaps and you've got Karl-Anthony Towns who are going to be restricted free agents. Minnesota and New York would be stupid to let either of those guys walk. And then DeMarcus Cousins and Al Horford and Chris Middleton round out your top 10. So any of those guys pique your interest? I would like Chris Middleton, but I think he's going to be way too expensive for the Bulls.
But outside of that,
it doesn't really pique my interest.
And I don't disagree necessarily with Luke's idea about developing your young talent into star caliber players and then adding second tier pieces around them. And you know that in a vacuum as an idea could work, could be successful. But the question is the young talent you're developing right now good enough to be the guys that all you need to do is add complementary pieces around versus adding a player that is better than the young talent you're developing? That's kind of the crux of the conversation we're having. And to your point, I agree. There's no way that the Bulls are going to go out and get any of those big-name free agents in 2019. We've said that on the show before. And the Bulls fans who were clamoring for that, I think, are just not – they're living in a fantasy world. And I can hear some of my haters chirping and writing, well, you said there's no way the Bulls were going to sign Jabari, and that happened. And, you know, they also signed Dwayne Wade. Like, they can. I'm sorry, was there a bidding war for Jabari Parker? No, there was not. Was there a bidding war for Dwayne Wade? No, there was not. The Bulls, in each case, were the team, outside of the team the player was currently on, who were, in my opinion, foolish enough to throw a whole lot of money at that player when there was no bidding war to speak of. So that is different than when you're talking about some of these top-tier free agent names in 2019. There's a big difference, and that's why there's no hope for the Bulls to land any of those players.
Yeah, I'd say, so I guess the main focus here is you hope that of the carousel of guys that you've got right now, one of those guys hits as an all-star. One of those guys is your guy that you can prop up and be your number one. Whether it's Markkanen, whether it's LaVine, whether it's Parker, whether it's Carter, whether it's Dunn. Any of those guys, I think that's your best bet. And what our caller, I think, is saying, too, is develop your young guys, which is the path that I think the Bulls are on right now. And I'm pretty excited to see what they can do with this mash of guys and see if they can get anything of value and if anybody ends up surprising us. Like, a lot of people around the league are down on the Bulls, are down on the fact that the way that the skepticism that Matt has about Jabari Parker is there. The same thing with LaVine, if he's going to come back and not just be a guy that's going to chuck up shots at a terrible efficiency rate. Like, all these questions is whether or not they can take the next step has the Bulls down. And I think this year, out of any other year, is the most important as far as where this rebuild goes. If nobody develops on this team this year, everybody kind of stays at the same level, there's frustrations, you'd be looking at another year of having to try and develop this team before the Bulls are willing to unload their pockets and say, okay, we're going to be willing to spend now. And I think it's all cruxed by the idea, too, that depending on how Jabari Parker plays next season, if the Bulls pick up his option in 2019, then the conversation of being able to sign any top-tier free agent is out the window. You don't just won't have cap space to do that. And that's before you sign Bobby Portis, Cameron Payne, Chris Dunn to any type of extension. You're looking at around $16 million next season if you pick up Jabari Parker's option. So that's also something to monitor. But like we said, I think the Celtics, they were way more in line, and they had to tank for a handful of years before they got good again. You know, when they traded away to get all of those first-round picks from the Brooklyn Nets, they had to be bad for a handful of years before they really were able to accelerate this thing.
And I think most people highlight that the Celtics were not bad for the length of time and the number of seasons the tanking teams usually are. Like, the Celtics turnaround and the Celtics rebuild was very quick in the span of breaking up the old Celtics of KG and Paul Pierce and, you know, and Rondo, even after Ray Allen had departed to Miami, and the new Celtics that are coming in as Eastern Conference favorites this season. There was not a lot of turnaround time, and people are saying, well, you know, that's the way to do it. Okay, well, so if your front office can pull off the insane swindle of a deal that the Celtics did with the Nets, great, you're sitting pretty. But that was a very rare kind of trade where one team completely fleeced the other. That doesn't happen all that often.
So what I would tell this caller is, yes, partially the Bulls are on that path that you want them to be on. I think we have to have a little bit more faith in the guys that are already on this roster rather than looking into free agency. And then it would also, too, maybe you can build up some value with any of these guys that if somebody becomes available, a top-tier star in this league comes available from a team that's trying to hit the rebuild button, that's where the Bulls pounce. I don't have a name for you right now as far as a guy that is going to finally say, you know what, I'm done here. I want out. I want to go somewhere that's actually going to win. I don't have a name for you right now, but the Bulls could be in that same position that the Rockets were with OKC, with James Harden, not having to be able to pay him the money. The same thing could be happening around the league in the next couple of years. So that would be the position that I think is best for the Bulls to go ahead and go forward with. Develop the guys that you already have under contract and that you drafted, and then wait to pounce on one of those stars that wants out.
Hey, guys. Another voicemail. I was the crazy guy that thought that Lowry should play the three. Still not sure that was that crazy. But anyways, I have a couple different questions. So I wanted to follow up and ask you guys, who do you think should be the alpha on this team? My friend and I have also argued about this and also discussed this as well. So just kind of curious as to who do you think you guys should be the alpha when it comes down to crunch time? Who takes the shot? Who's your guy? Looking at everyone's skill set, you know, I'm sure Matt really wants Lowry to be taking the last shot. But thinking about it, I would rather actually have somebody like Levine take the shot because he's pretty good at creating his own shot. Or maybe even Jabari. But, you know, with the thing with Lowry is he's great as a spot up. He's okay and decent at getting at past guys that are a little bit bigger than him because he's a little bit quicker. But I just don't see Lowry creating for himself. And we've seen Dunn take over some games in the fourth quarter this last year. So I'm just curious as to who you guys think, who would you want your alpha to be? Who would you want to be taking your crunch time shot?
All right, Matt, I'm going to let you touch on this one first. Thanks for the call again, too. Who's taking the last shot more often than not this season?
And again, no offense intended when this caller talked to us earlier about Markkanen and playing at the three, and I told him he was crazy. Everybody is entitled to their own opinion, and you're entitled to have opinions of other people's opinions. That's what makes being a sports fan so much fun. So basically what you're saying here is that you think Levine should be that guy, and then if not Levine, Jabari. As the Bulls, it's a clutch time, crunch time, game situation, tied or trailing by 2 or 3 points, in the waning moments of the fourth quarter. And you want Zach LaVine to be that guy. Let me just show you something, just to play devil's advocate, because I don't necessarily think you're way off base in the hope that Zach LaVine can be that, create his own shot, you know, be the clutch guy to win games for the Bulls player moving forward, especially with a full healthy season. And we saw that at times last season. The biggest one that comes to mind, of course, is his fourth quarter dueling with Jimmy Butler in a game where they actually beat the Timberwolves and nobody saw that coming. And LaVine, it was probably one of his better games of the season. But this is a poll that our friends over at Bulls Talk Twitter, which is NBC Sports Chicago's Bulls fans affiliate page, ran earlier this week. Bulls are trailing with 8 seconds left, inbounding, side out. Who gets the last shot? And the poll largely was in Markkanen's favor. 68% of fans want Markkanen taking the last shot, 18% Zach LaVine, 10% Jabari Parker, 5% Chris Dunn. And these numbers from Bulls Talk are pretty enlightening. LaVine's clutch field goal percentage last season, 27.3%, ranked 138th. Of 144 players who attempted at least 20 shots in clutch situations last year. 138th out of 144 qualifying players. Chris Dunn, meanwhile, who the least amount of Bulls fans voted for as wanting to take that clutch shot, was 35th out of 144. Slightly ahead of Kyrie Irving on half the attempts, but still. Ahead of Kyrie Irving, Chris Dunn was a better clutch shooter than Kyrie Irving last season. And then for Lowry, 37.7% in clutch time. 31 games, 143 minutes. Jabari Parker did not attempt a shot in 9 games in 21 minutes in what is defined as clutch time. So the numbers are there for you. And maybe you could say, okay, well, he was coming off an injury and he was on minutes restriction and blah, 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 blah. But Zach LaVine's clutch shooting numbers last season were, you're talking towards the very bottom of the list across the league, bad. And Chris Dunn, the guy that the fewest Bulls fans said should be taking that last shot, had the best numbers of any Bulls player last season.
Does it say what the minutes were as far as when Zach LaVine played in that range of clutch shots, clutch shot percentage? How often was Zach LaVine shooting?
So those numbers in clutch situations, LaVine's numbers were 3.0 points, 27.3% field goals, 76.5% from the free throw line, and that spanned 9 and 33 total minutes of clutch time.
Well, the only thing that I would say there is the fact that, like you had mentioned, coming off an injury, only played 25 games. Not really. The Bulls aren't necessarily in situations where you need a clutch shot, too. Think about the team that the Bulls had last year. If you're a bad team, you're not going to be in a lot of situations where you need clutch shots, right?
What are you talking about? The Bulls were in a lot of close games last year. And they lost a lot of close games last year. They won a few. But they were in a lot of close games last year. Just because it's not like trying to beat the team that's the one seed and you're currently the two seed. Like, if it's the worst team in the league versus the second worst team in the league, those clutch situations are still applicable.
Yeah, but you're not in the same situation as, like, top-tier teams who maybe night in and night out are playing in situations where, that's going to matter more. Like,
top-tier teams aren't playing those situations night in and night out. Top-tier teams most nights are beating teams by 15 or 20.
But at the same time, you could say the same thing about the Bulls. Like, the Bulls were playing in games where they were trailing by 15 or 20 a night. And Zach LaVine, was he really a part of a lot of those games? Like 25 games at the end of the season?
So again,
like, I can mix and match.
I mean,
I
told
you.
So it's a small sample size. In games where the Bulls were in a clutch situation, Zach LaVine was in 9 of those games and played across those 9 games a total of 33 clutch minutes. So it is a small sample size. Comparatively, Chris Dunn, who ranked much higher, as I mentioned earlier, 35th of 144 qualified players, Dunn played in 27 of those games for the Bulls last season, and spanning those 27 games, a total of 109 minutes. So a larger sample size for Dunn than LaVine, but in that larger sample size, Dunn shot 48.3% from the field in clutch situations, compared to LaVine's 27.3%. That's hard to ignore.
I'm going to chalk it up to the fact that maybe I need to see it this year, and we'll definingly who will be taking that shot. I think we're both in agreement, though, going back to the question. Lauri Markkanen's the guy. Like, I would want him taking the last shot. The thing that I would say, too, though, is instead of only having one or two guys that can take that last shot, the Bulls have 5 guys on that roster that you could plug in at the end of the game. Between Carter, Markkanen, LaVine, Parker, and Dunn, that all are willing and capable of knocking down that last shot, which last season the Bulls didn't have. So that's something good to look at, too, is, like, you have 5 guys on the court.
And let's not forget Mr. Clutch himself, Denzel Valentine.
Yeah.
Winner of the Summer League
Absolutely.
Championship. Dude who hit tons of clutch shots for Michigan State. I'm saying this half-jokingly, but, you know, To C. Red Fred's credit, as the biggest Denzel stan among Bulls fans, LaVine, like, are you talking about Denzel stepping up and hitting a big 3-pointer late in the fourth quarter? I can see that happening. Like, and you're right about that. The Bulls have lots of options. And it's not like I would necessarily say, which our caller suggested, that I'm like, oh my God, Lowry has to be the one taking the last shot. No, I don't necessarily feel that way. We did see some games, including the first game that Zach LaVine came back, I want to say January 13th against Detroit, and it was the night after, not night after, but game after Markkanen had his monster 33 at the Garden. Markkanen hit the game winner in that game. And Markkanen hit the game winner after missing a wide open three also late in the fourth quarter, and they turn around and gave the ball right back to Markkanen. So we've seen that Markkanen has the stones to step up and make big shots as well. But I'm not saying, oh, Markkanen has to be that guy, and I'd throw a hissy fit if he didn't get the shot and LaVine or Parker did. I think you're right. If you don't have a player on your team named LeBron James, Michael Jordan, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, etc. It's not like, okay, well, that guy has to take that last shot. Anybody on this young Bulls team can take the last shot, and if it's a good shot and if it's a open shot, I'd be fine with it.
To Zach LaVine's credit, though, and to Chris Dunn's credit, Chris Dunn knocking down that late shot against Alec Burks back in December against Utah, and then the other one I can think of is when Zach LaVine hits the three-pointer with like 14 seconds left when we were at the Timberwolves game, and then Jimmy Butler came down and missed a shot from the corner where the Bulls ultimately ended up winning. So there are times where Zach LaVine has been clutch, but what the stats say is that last year, over the totality of the amount of time that Zach LaVine's played, he was not clutch. But there are one or two moments here or there, and we'll see if they can build off of those. But I think the ultimate argument here, me and you both say that you've got five guys on the roster that can shoot, and you're confident in giving them the last shot, whether it's Carter, Markkanen, LaVine, Dunn.
Well, I mean, no. Let's make a quick clarification there. I'm not saying I'm confident in any of those guys taking the last shot. I'm saying I'm fine with any of those guys taking the last shot. I don't think it is a situation where there is only one right answer of who should take the last shot. I'm not confident that all of those guys can be good clutch shooters this season. Yes, it's a small sample size, but I look at the clutch numbers from LaVine and I say, oh my God, that's awful. But I'm okay with him trying to improve upon those numbers. I'm okay with Jabari Parker trying to be a guy who makes clutch baskets in clutch moments. There's a difference between being confident in all five of these projected starters taking the last shot and being just okay with the fact that there shouldn't be one right answer for who takes the last shot.
331-979-1369 is our line to hit us up. I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern at 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on social media on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, Facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail line, once again, 331-979-1369. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.